Hi, it's Craig Wilkinson, and just welcome back to another exciting episode in this journey of being dangerous but good. Talking to a great friend of mine, a brother, colleague, wonderful individual about being dangerous to fatherlessness. And I think we'll also slide in a bit of being dangerous to gender-based violence. Titi Mba is a good friend. We've known each other for a short time, but really bonded. We have the same passion. Titi has a background in real estate, tremendous story, a success story in business, also a TV show called Cribs. He's also done a whole podcast series, and he's done recently done a series with his dad. He started the network I'm a Timer, which is really all about fatherhood and restoring fathers to their sons and fathers to their daughters. So just to bring you in the picture, we talk about how to be the most effective, influential, powerful, competent person you can possibly be, and how to use that power and that influence for good, to change the world. And the particular area we are being dangerous today too is this scourge of fatherlessness, the scourge of GBV. So, Titi, welcome, brother.
And
good to be here.
What an intro. Did someone pay you for this, Craig? Good to be here, man, and congratulations on dangerous but good. I love it. Yeah. I love it. Really looking forward to, obviously, engaging with you on this on this topic of fatherlessness. You know, as the Amatama Wellness Network, we look after the wellness of men. And obviously, we're trying to promote, you know, present fatherhood. You know, we want fathers to be there for their daughters and their sons, you know. And this is what it's about. And I'm here and I'm excited to have this conversation with you.
Awesome. And great to have you on board. I mean, before we launch into the whole fatherless thing and the stuff you're doing there, you're a successful guy. I mean, when you came into the studio, you know, I always say, you know, Titi, no matter how hard you try and outswag Titi, you're never going to do it, mate. Just admit it. He'll outswag you every day of the week, you know. But, you know, your success, your influence, your so there are two elements, you know. We want to be powerful.
Yeah.
And then we want to have be a force for good. Your personal effectiveness, your personal success, tell us a bit about that. Some of the secrets that have made you a very influential and an effective individual.
I think, Craig, you know, for me, you know, being raised in the township already kind of propelled me and gave me a bit of an advantage. And most people wouldn't understand that. Yeah. The thing is about growing up in a township is that the township is the university of life. It is the only place where you get to learn about different cultures and languages. You know, there are people there who are Xhosa, Zulu, Sotho, there's Tsotsitaal, there's Venda. So you learn to be agile. And that's what the township teaches you. Yes. You can put me in any city in the world, I'll be fine. Because I've learned how to kind of live with other people. And I think for me, that's what I define as success. Success for me has got nothing to do with money.
Right.
It's got nothing to do with how much money I've got in my bank account, how many buildings I own and all those things. Those are all material things that you actually found on this earth and you will definitely leave. You're going to leave and you could lose them. So I define success by the amount of people that I can impact.
I love it.
By the things I say to them, yeah. By my actions, by my behavior. And I think it talks to a lot about role modeling. You know, when we grew up in the township, the kind of role models we had were not ideal. You know, we looked up to guys that steal cars, that, you know, you drive beautiful cars, but we knew very well that those guys don't work. They don't wake up in the morning and go, you know, to hustle. They actually, and I think that's why I felt that, you know, running a movement like the Amatama Wellness Network gives the boys an opportunity to have someone to look up to. And that for me is really the definition of success.
Beautiful. You're being the voice of the father to those boys that they never had.
Absolutely.
I love what one guy said. He said, become the father you wish you had.
Shoo.
And then you'll never have to go through your life wishing you had a father.
100%.
And I think that's the power that we have as men in this world is to break the cycle. Eh?
Yeah.
Whatever went before me stops with me.
It has to stop with you.
But more about yourself. I mean, you built a successful real estate business, successful job. I mean, what are some of the keys that bring the ability to be successful as an individual?
I think humility.
Humility.
Humility is the one thing that gives me access to the world.
Right.
Because the thing is, when you humble yourself, Craig, no one can insult you.
Yeah.
Because you come with a humble nature.
Right.
And I think for me, my success is really based on that. You know, I can meet you today and Craig happens to be the president of the country and I can meet another Craig who's a gardener, but my humility will still be the same towards both. You value them equally. You treat them equally. You respect them equally. And I think that's one thing that I've taught my kids is that irrespective of anyone's social standing, you treat people with respect and you demand respect when you go out there as long as you give it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you know, in terms of sales, and, yeah. I mean, you know, life's all about selling and selling yourself, sure. Selling your business. Yeah. The more, the better you make people feel about themselves in a sincere way, the more likely they are to trust you with the product that you're selling.
Yeah.
So I think that humility is also about honoring other people,
very
valuing
true.
Other people, seeing very them true. As equally valuable human beings.
Yeah.
And then they want to do business with you. They want to hang
absolutely.
Out with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a saying that goes, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So for me, that's something that I've always, you know, put on the back of my mind, even the people that I employ, you know, you must show care towards the people yes. that work for you. You expect them to produce the best results for your company, mm-hmm. but you don't take care of them. You don't show that you actually care for them. A simple example, someone would have a burial in the family. Mm-hmm. How do you treat that employee? Yes, you know, it's a little things.
They're not a machine. They're a human being.
They're a human being, just like you are. Imagine yourself how you feel when you've lost a loved one.
I love that. Yeah. You put yourself in their shoes.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
But Titi, I mean, I've also noticed with you, you're a man of your word. And you know, so often you have a meeting with someone and they're late. You're early. You know,
I'm always
you're
early.
You're on time. So, I mean, there's an element of discipline involved as well
absolutely.
In your life and the way you structure. Tell us a bit about that. Because you know, we want people to be the best version of themselves.
Sure.
And if you don't have discipline and you don't have integrity and you don't care about other people, you're never going to be your best.
Very
so,
true.
So talk about your discipline and integrity.
Craig, there's no way that I can expect you to respect me if I don't respect myself.
Right.
And it starts with me. Yeah. I have to respect my time. My time, you know, the beauty about time is that you can never regain it. Mm-hmm. Once it's gone, it's gone. This moment now will never come back again.
That's true.
And so that's why I've kind of, you know, put a lot of discipline around mm-hmm. the concept of time. I wake up in the morning. I know that I've only got 24 hours in a day. Mm-hmm. How am I going to make the best of those 24 hours? Yes. Am I going to sit there being sad and being negative and being pessimistic? Or am I going to wake up with an attitude to say, hey, there's someone out there who's actually fighting for their life.
Right.
You are healthy. You can speak. You can see. You can hear. You've got an opportunity to make a difference out there. Mm-hmm. And so it comes with structure for me. You know, I'm a very structured person. I like to know what's happening, what I'm getting myself into. When I walk into meetings, I'd like to be prepared. And I think that discipline is something that I learned at a very young age, being raised by two parents who were blue collar workers, you know, watching them wake up in the morning, mm-hmm. Disciplined to go get onto a taxi,
right.
get to work, two taxis, three taxis even,
right.
come back home and still have to fulfill the role of being parents.
Right.
You know, for me, it's so important for us as parents to emulate what our kids should actually be seeing
very
out there.
Sure. They look to you for that, don't they?
They look up to us. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Tell me too, you know, one of the, we've had many conversations around
Oh,
this,
too many.
Which is great. Yeah? And one of the things I've really enjoyed about you, and I've shared this with you, is the fact that you don't have this, I'm building my empire and I'm jealous of other people's empires and I'm going to cut them out. And so many of us live in a world where we pull each other down. You know, that tall poppy syndrome.
PhD.
What is PhD?
They call it pull him down.
Pull him down.
Or pull her down.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you see someone climbing up and you're jealous, so you pull them down, as opposed to saying, well, I'm going to celebrate the success because there's enough to go around. You know, talk about that, because I think that's a rare quality.
Yeah.
It's a very beautiful quality. And we will only build a beautiful world if we work together.
That's very true. Yeah. And I think it goes back to my initial point where I said to you, I was raised in a community or in mm-hmm. the township where you have to understand other people's cultures, how they operate, how different households have different values. Mm-hmm. And I think with that, you know, it propels you to the next level mm-hmm. because now I'm able to, you know, work with people in different races, different cultural beliefs, and not be offensive to others. Respect the fact that you are Muslim, you are Jewish, you are Christian.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, we're all human beings.
And
for me, that's what it's about. And I'm not used to doing things by myself. I like involving other people. Yeah. I do believe that, you know, you lift others as you rise.
Yeah.
And that for me is a concept that I've entrenched since a very young age.
Yeah.
That's why I'm very passionate about employing young people, because I believe that at some point you need to pass on the baton. When we are young, unfortunately, we never had role models that will kind of mentor us to become what we are. We had to learn and swim against the tide.
Yeah.
That's what we've done. But what I've learned is that there's so much power in collaborating. And I've seen that with me and you and the relationship we've had and how open you've been as well. And I think it's a two-way street, Craig. You can, in as much as you say, I don't work alone. You are the same. You're exactly the same. Open-minded, always, you know, ideating different ideas to work with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you get booked so often, because they see you as someone who's accessible, someone who's authentic, and someone who's genuinely true to the cause.
Well, I mean, that Ubuntu thing, I am because you are, is exactly what it is, eh?
Yeah.
You win, I win.
Absolutely.
Win, you win, you know?
Absolutely.
It's not like you win, I lose.
Absolutely.
You do well. And I never forget, years ago, a friend of mine, when we were still in our 30s, he had done quite well. And he,
yeah.
and he wanted to buy an Audi, a top of the range Audi.
Right.
And it was so fascinating how he felt about it and how other people felt. Many were jealous.
Yeah.
And there were a few of us, a couple of brothers, who man, they said, go for it, man. I mean, we were rejoicing in his success. There was no sense of he's got a better car than me, you know. And I think if we can get that right, we can really go very far.
Sure, the world would change if we could do that. And I think, unfortunately, you know, the world just waits for you to fall. They're just waiting. They're literally in anticipation, waiting just for them to meet. And you see how it is with social media. And that's why I'm not a big fan of social media platforms like your X and Twitter, because I don't think they send out a positive message out there. And that's why I don't engage on platforms that don't, push positivity. And that's why the other day you and I even had a conversation about masculinity. Mm-hmm. And we said, there's actually nothing wrong with masculinity. Mm-hmm. There's a lot wrong with the negative masculinity. Sure, sure. But we need to embrace our positive masculinity as men and be in tune with who we are. We shy away from that because we're scared that people are going to say, no, that's toxic masculinity. No, there's nothing wrong with masculinity at all.
Quite the opposite. I mean, masculine is a beautiful gift.
It is.
Masculinity is necessary. Masculinity is crucial, and it's wonderful. Mm. You know, I think people are waiting for other people to fall are people who are not doing anything with their own lives. They're just not making it happen.
Yeah.
So because they're not making it happen, you know, they want
no one else should.
Well, you know, mediocrity loves company, doesn't it?
Oh, it does.
When you start doing brilliantly well, and I've got the same hours in the day, I've got the same everything, and you're using it well, and I'm using it badly, I start to think, well, he's making me look bad. You know, so let me pull him down.
Yeah. It makes me feel better.
Yeah, instead of being inspired by TT and what he's doing and saying, well, you know, wow, he comes from my hood. He can do that. I can also do that. You know, I mean, that's the way. Yeah. Talk about role models, TT. I mean, you said growing up at a township. But look, I think this is universal.
And yeah.
I think wherever we grew up, I mean, my life too, I was very blessed to grow up in a sort of middle class family. You know,
sure.
We didn't lack for anything. We weren't super rich. We weren't poor.
Yeah.
But even there's a lack of really positive, good male role models.
Very true.
And so in many ways, we had to find our own way. And I mean, you and I, I'm slightly older than you, maybe more than slightly older.
Ah, I know what, I'm 45. I'm 45, Craig. You can't be that much older than me.
Yeah, but our generation, I mean, we often mentor each other. Eh?
Yeah.
There's a peer mentoring process. You know, I learn from you learn from me, and it's a beautiful thing. So where did you find the kind of things that have driven your success? Where did you find it? Where were they modeled, you know, to you?
So for me, you know, it is environments that I chose to surround myself in. Right. I was very particular about the kind of environments, because you are your environment, Craig, and you are the company you keep. Yes. Whether you like it or not, you know, you can have 20 degrees, but if you hang around with people that don't have degrees, they're going to pull you down at some point.
Exactly, yeah.
And so for me, I'm always very wary about my environments and who is in that space, who's in the room. You know, we always say that, you know, you need to find a seat on the table, but what kind of table do you want to sit?
Right,
and for me, I'm very particular about that. And some people might think it's arrogant of me, but it's to protect my space. It's to protect my peace as well. I think if we could all be clear about the type of peace we want and we desire, then we choose the environments that will give us that peace.
Well, you know, what comes to mind when you say that is intentionality.
Absolutely.
You are intentional about what you read, where you hang out, who you hang out with, what you fill your mind
with.
What
I watch.
What you watch. Yeah. You know, it's an intentionality.
Yeah.
You know, someone is saying, you know, I want a good life, and therefore what do I need to do to build that?
And what does that look like?
What does it look like?
Because a good life for you might not be a good life for me. Exactly. It's very relative. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah. Let's jump into fatherhood. Man.
I even forgot that there's a topic here. Because now
absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, the topic is life, eh?
Yeah.
I mean, the topic is life, being effective, being the best person you can be.
Yeah.
You know, my fatherhood journey, my son is now 30, my daughter's 27. What a journey it's been. What a beautiful journey. You got the two girls, am I right?
Yeah, I've got two girls, and it's such an experience, and it's such a journey. I was actually watching a video of you hugging your son. That surprise. I was like, this is what fatherhood is about.
That's exactly what it's about. Yeah. But I tell you what, TT, when my daughter was 2.5, doctors said to us that she'd need an operation on her heart.
Sure.
She had a small hole in one of the walls of the heart. Life-threatening. But she had, and the technology is amazing. Instead of cutting open the heart, which they used to do,
there's
a catheter that they put into the vein and it pops up.
Look at that.
And a little device. I mean, incredible. So literally hour surgery. 2 stitches in the groin, and that's it. When time came for surgery, she was very scared, you know. And as a protective father, you know, you got
girls. Of course.
And I said to the doc, you know, because that theater is a scary place, I said, please, can I bring her into theater, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, look, it's unusual. We don't normally allow it, but, you know, we'll allow it. So I had to scrub up, mask up. I carried her into theater. They even allowed me to hold her in my arms as they put the the gas mask over her face, and she fell asleep in my arms.
Sure.
I handed her over, and you know, just to allay her fears. Operation was a great. I had to leave. Operation was a great success. Sure. When she came around, I was there. You know, and so I was there when she fell asleep. We're there when she woke up.
Sure.
And operation was a great success. 1 month later, we're at my house, and we're having a we're having a get together.
Yeah.
Bly, standing outside with a bunch of mates. And Blythe's standing next to me. You know how little girls
yeah.
do? Holding
yeah,
onto daddy's
yeah, of course.
Leg,
the you know? Protector.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And one of my mates said to her, Blythe, I believe you were in hospital recently. Just checking. And she said, yes, yes, I was. And she said, my heart was broken, she said. And then she said, but my daddy fixed it.
Oh, listen to that.
I tell you what, TT.
Listen to that.
I mean, even now telling the story.
Jeez.
I mean, I had to leave the...
That's her first love. You know that, right?
Her first
forever.
Love. But I tell you what, the gift it gave me
yeah.
was to say... Man, I do hold her heart in my hands.
Yeah.
And I hold my son's heart in my hands.
Sure.
And how I pitch up as a man and as a father is going to have a massive impact on their lives, man.
Absolutely.
And I had to look in the mirror and say, man, am I that man?
Sure.
And I mean, the answer is, in some ways, yes. In some ways, I've got some work to do.
You know? No, of course, you're not perfect.
We're not perfect. But, you know, so I mean, none of us arrive at adulthood whole. And you know,
yeah.
so that journey of fatherhood is a beautiful one.
It is.
And it's a parallel journey. It's becoming the man they need you to be.
Yeah.
And it's learning how to father.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen wonderful, wonderful clips of you and your daughters.
I mean, that craziness.
Love affairs, yeah, tell us about that. I mean, how did they change your heart and your life?
Listen, Craig, being a father is a privilege. There are men out there that kind of have kids.
Yeah.
And you are sitting out there, you've got kids out there that you're not taking care of. And there's a man out there who'd love the opportunity just to be a father. And they can't because of nature.
Looking at it, yeah.
Because of nature. And so for me, you know, and I never want to cast judgment on anyone because we never know what the background is of someone not being present in their children's lives, right? We've also got this pandemic of women, you know, lying about the paternity of children, and where men now are raising kids that are not theirs and finding out later on that it's not child. So, yeah. So there's so much that's loaded, but coming back to your question, fatherhood is a privilege that I obviously grab with both hands. I feel blessed that God chose me to be a father to my daughters. And I'm taking that blessing and teaching them mm-hmm. how to appreciate that blessing through me.
Yes.
And for me, you know, I create moments with my kids because I want them to always see me as a friend first, mm-hmm. not as a father. Because mm-hmm. the minute they see me as a friend, then they can confide in me about right. anything and everything that affects their lives, which is what I want.
Yeah.
We were raised by fathers that we used to fear. I used to fear my father because I knew that he would beat me up or he would slap me around or, and that was normal for us, by the way. He was not an exception to the rule. All the men in the street, in the township, it was normal.
It wasn't considered abusive.
No, not at all. They were reprimanding you. In fact, if you were naughty and you broke, I mean, I remember the one day I broke a window. We were playing soccer. I broke a window of a neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
Pure mistake.
Right.
We were playing soccer and I broke the window and the neighbor actually beat me up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And after they beat me up, they took me to my dad, who then also beat me up to say, why did you do that? And that was normal.
Beating, eh?
Now, you can't raise kids like that in this day and age because there's no lesson to be learned.
Yeah.
In fact, when I think back about it, I'm actually angry at my father, but also understanding of the circumstances at the time that
right.
that was how it was back then. You can't do that now. How you reprimand children now is completely different. You gotta teach them that there's a lesson to be learned. You know, what you did was wrong and it's an error. It could have happened to anybody. Mm-hmm. I'm using the breaking window as an example.
Yes.
It was just for that man to sit me down and say, look, you've messed up. You can see this is what happened. It's a mistake. Everyone actually attested to that. Come take me to my father.
Mm-hmm.
Say that your son has messed up. You got to obviously pay. And that's the lesson is that maybe
there's,
my father.
There's consequence.
There's consequence. Yeah. And maybe my father should have punished me by making me wash the car for the entire month or clean or do the garden. But there must be consequence so that tomorrow I don't make the same mistake.
Yes.
But we have to allow our kids to make a mistake.
Exactly.
For me, I don't subscribe to this perfect life. It doesn't work.
But tell me about your heart.
Yeah.
I mean, how did you, I mean, I know for me what happened, you know, you just fall in love. What happened to your heart as a man? With you, these two
goosebumps.
Beautiful young lives.
Goosebumps. Yeah. I mean, I was there when they were both delivered.
Yeah, yeah.
And for me, just to hold them, I even still have their pictures when they were born.
Yeah.
I thought these things only happen in the movies. And now I get to have a first real life experience of holding a newborn baby and feeling and that connection is something that no one can take away from me, Craig. And I think, you know, it's painful to speak to certain men or fathers and when you ask them, were you there for the delivery?
Mm.
No, I was working.
Yeah.
So you took a work trip
mm-hmm.
knowing that your wife is about to deliver.
Yeah.
What, like our priorities at some point as men are quite, you know, confusing, because in the same breath we're hustling for our families, we're trying to make as much money for them, but at the cost of their relationship.
Right, exactly.
Is it really worth it?
Yeah.
Is it really worth it to work 24 hours a day and not have any time for them? But you're doing it for them. But you can't even spend time with them. They can't even enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Yeah. Well, in some ways, are we doing it for them? You know, in some ways, we're doing it for ourselves to drive a better car. I mean, someone said it beautifully. They said, your kids need your presence more than your presence, you know?
Very true.
Far more than what you give them physically.
Very true.
You yourself are their greatest gift.
Very true.
And you know, I'm convinced that we are the greatest fathering tool, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You can learn techniques, but your presence, your life, how you pitch up, how you treat their mother.
Oh, yeah.
That's the greatest thing. But, you know, you run I'm a Timer. I run Father a Nation. We both, I mean, we just aligned on this.
Yeah, 100%.
To restore fathers, you know? South Africa is one of the most unfathered nations in the
world.
It is. And there's a reason for that, you know, migrant labor, the whole separate development, you know, economic, single-sex hospital. I mean, we know that there's a reason.
Sure.
But breaking that cycle has become crucial. You know, the link between fatherlessness and every social ill, as you and I know.
Yeah.
I mean, most prisoners have a bad or zero relationship with their father.
Yeah.
Early teenage pregnancy, school dropouts, drug abuse, race. I mean, I'm talking about abuse.
Yeah.
These are all linked to fatherlessness.
They are.
And so you have a passion. I have a passion. You know, tell us about what drove you to set up I'm a Timer.
So I'm a Timer was formed in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Is it 2020 or 2019? No, 2020.
Yeah.
It was during the height of COVID.
Yes.
So we are locked up in our homes. And of course, everyone is talking to everyone because we are home. There's not much to do. And the conversations I was having with different men was focused more on, geez, bro, I'm tired. I need to go to gym. I can't even go exercise at gym.
Yeah.
I'm binging at home. I'm eating too much. I'm watching too much TV. I'm getting fat. But now it moved from the physical to the mental. Hey, bro, no, I can't do this anymore. I feel like I'm in prison at my own home.
Yeah,
the wife is screaming at me, the kids. And then it moved from that to financial. Hey, bro, it's been 2 months now. There's no income. The expenses are piling up. And I thought to myself, why are all these men talking to me? As if I've got the solution. And I thought to myself, let me start a network. And I registered the name I'm a Timer. I'm a Timer is a Kasi slang for fathers. Anyone who's respectful is called a timer. And it's not limited to biology, by the way. An uncle is a timer.
Yes.
A bishop is a timer. A school principal. Someone who holds a respectful position in life. Who's a man.
A father figure. Yeah.
A father figure. And so I'm a Timer Wellness Network was born. And we really focus on three pillars of wellness. Physical wellness, mental wellness, and financial wellness.
Fantastic, yeah. And men are really needy at the moment, eh? Men are struggling. Men are battling.
Yeah.
Men commit to suicide 4 times more than women. Men are struggling. So the need for brothers to support each other and validate each other. And we don't really do it, eh? We don't speak about these things. You know?
No, we don't.
I mean two women will meet each other and half an hour later they know everything about each other.
Very true.
You know, you and I will meet and all I know is you support Chiefs.
Yeah, and what
I
wear.
Yeah, what you wear.
Yeah, we don't get deep.
We don't get deep, yeah? I'm not going to compliment you on what you wear.
No. Those are material things.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's well done. I mean, it's a great need in our nation.
Yeah.
But I want to delve deep into the fatherhood thing. You know, you have a beautiful relationship with your dad.
Yes.
And recently you've put together a whole series with you and your dad hosting, talking about fatherhood. Yeah.
Yeah.
We want to be dangerous to fatherlessness in South Africa. We want to kill fatherlessness. We want to end it.
Sure.
And as you said rightly, fathers are not necessarily biological fathers. Uncle, bigger brother, sports coaches, teachers. Yeah. I mean, all of these guys can play a massive role in being a father. How do we become a danger in South Africa to fatherlessness? How do we end it?
The only way we can become a danger to fatherlessness in South Africa is by promoting positive fatherhood. We need to have an influx of good stories. We need to show the world that there are good fathers out there.
Yeah.
Because right now, it's all negative. Yeah. Men are trash. Men are abusers. Yeah. Men this, men that.
Toxic masculinity.
We need to change the narrative and go, if TT can have such a good relationship with his daughters, what's stopping me? Because my relationship with my daughters has got nothing to do with money.
Yeah.
Absolutely zero to do with money.
Right.
And even further, my relationship with my dad, the fact that we are where we're at now, coming from, you know, an upbringing where I used to fear my dad, to the roles are reversed now. I'm more like his father now. And I know that sounds weird. He's more like my son now because he's older, you know, he's slower, and now I'm younger, and now I'm taking on that responsibility of looking after him. I wish, in retrospect, that we had this kind of relationship way earlier because I think I could have achieved way more. And for me, it's not even about that. It's just, it's just also showcasing that it's never too late to fix it. So fathers and sons, you know, I have these conversations with my dad, and we talk to other fathers and sons, and we shine a spotlight on the good relationships that are out there. And, but we also showcase the challenges that the father and son relationships have gone through. You know, we bring in a dad who has just come out of prison. I mean, I go into prisons and I talk to fathers who are behind bars. We've got a show called Amatama Behind Bars. And there we really talk about how the relationship was affected. Right. With your absence because of your actions. Yes. You decided to commit a crime. Mm-hmm. You were found guilty. And as a result, not only did it affect your relationship with your kids, but your entire family.
Yes.
Remember, when someone goes to prison and they're a breadwinner, everyone else that depends on that person, yeah, it falls apart. Yeah. And now, what happens when you come back? Mm-hmm. Do we just pick up the pieces and just move on? You know, so those are things that obviously we want to discuss and shine a spotlight on and showcase that you can actually have good fatherhood and father role models out there. And fatherlessness has to disappear.
It has to disappear.
We have no choice.
And girls need mothers and fathers.
Correct.
You know, I read a stat the other day that says approximately 30% of men have a very bad relationship with their father.
Yeah.
30% have no relationship whatsoever.
Sure.
And 30% have a very superficial, you know, skin deep.
Yeah.
Only 10% have an understanding. And I mean, we need to challenge South Africans to say, well, let's grow that 10%.
We have to.
As men, if you have a child, or even if you don't have a child, but you have someone that needs a father that you're mentoring, even if you're a teacher, a coach, a man in the community, become that father, man. Yeah. You know, I love what you say about money. One of our mentors from Father Nation was chatting to this female judge a while back. And she'd reached the pinnacle of her career, you know, this woman. And she came from a very poor background. And he said to her, what do you attribute your success to? And she thought a bit. Then she actually teared up and she said, my father.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, we grew up in a very poor environment. In fact, for many years we lived in a shack.
Sure.
But every morning when I got up, my dad had got up before me and boiled the water so that I could wash. Every time I came back from school or college by bus or taxi, he was there to greet me. So he said he had very little money, but he was a brilliant father. And that, his fatherhood, his presence, even though there was money, made me what I am today.
That's
true. So the power of fatherhood is absolutely enormous.
It's priceless, Craig. When you talk to some of the men that are behind bars and you ask them, so why are you here? And most of them will say, my father.
Exactly.
They'll say, my father. And I'm like, wow. If we can just change that narrative, we'll have less people in prison as
100%.
Well. And we'll have more fathers present for their kids. 100%. But there's another dynamic here that we need to talk about when it comes to fatherlessness. There's a lot of men out there that don't know where their daughters and sons are, because women are also partly to be blamed on certain instances. And I'm not using a one blanket fit size all approach, but the reality is that DNA testing and paternity testing is becoming fast a reality for men.
Yeah,
and I think that's something that the justice system needs to look into, because do you know how heartbreaking it is, Craig? There's even TV shows where there's a judge, you know, there's paternity shows, and the man just gets told, That's not your child. For me, it's wrong, Craig.
Yeah.
It's wrong because on a public platform, there's cameras around. You're about to tell me that this child that I've been raising for the past 20 years is not mine.
Yeah.
How am I supposed to react to that?
Yeah.
There's cameras. I can't express myself properly. And those are things that lead to gender-based violence, by the way, because a lot of men, you know, bottle things up that have affected them. Another issue that we need to talk about is we're raising our kids as broken people, men. A lot of broken men are raising broken kids because of our childhood traumas and things that we haven't dealt with.
Yes.
Especially black men, I'll say this quite openly. We black men don't necessarily like this concept of going to psychologists. Mm-hmm. We don't believe in that because we believe that, why must I go speak to a stranger who's got a notepad and all they're doing is, and how did you feel? And how did they? So it's a cultural thing as well for us. And we've been raised to seek solace and advice from the elders.
Yes.
But now if the elders are not there, or there's no present father figure or role model, then who do you turn to? And those are things that we need to talk about. That there's so many elements and folders that affect fatherlessness. Yeah. We can't use one approach.
Let's delve into some of those because, I mean, none of us grow up whole.
You know, yeah.
We grow, I mean, yeah. My younger brother committed suicide, took his life.
You did say.
So we all have pains in our journey.
Yeah.
Some far worse than others.
Of course.
Far worse.
Sure.
I mean,
some irreparable.
Some irreparable. Yeah. I mean, some just terrible abuse, neglect, abandonment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we grow up with wounds, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the first port of call for you and I as men is to say, look in the mirror and say, I need to fix myself. I need to go on a journey of wholeness, whatever that takes.
Yeah.
It may take going to see a counselor, a psychologist.
Yeah.
It certainly will take speaking to brothers who can listen. Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know? I mean, one of the things about opening up to a brother is you suddenly realize that, hey, I'm not alone in this. You know, I share something that I'm dealing with. Oh, me too, you know. And we realize we're in the same boat, you know.
Yeah.
We're dealing with the same stuff.
We
the
are.
Same pressures on us as men
and
as fathers. One of the things that drives men away from families is the shame of not being able to bring the bacon home.
Absolutely.
One of the things, and you said this too, is parental alienation, where women use kids as a weapon.
Yeah.
They weaponize kids and they say, you know what, I'm holding your kid back from you. You know, you haven't paid damages, you haven't, whatever the case.
Yeah.
And I think that's also something where women need to really
Your children
need their father.
Yeah.
If the father's offended you, don't let that affect the fact that he is the father to your
child. It's got nothing to do with the child.
And men too, you know, don't be ashamed that you can't bring bacon. You're doing your very best.
But
what they want is your presence. They want you.
Yeah.
They want you to be present in the lives of their dad. And,
true.
And so I'm excited about the work you're doing, about the work we're doing. But
no,
there's
absolutely.
Much to be done, isn't there?
There's a lot, Craig. There's a lot, and I think we need to unpack it in phases. You know, we can't deal with this skeleton, this big animal, and think we're gonna cut it up into sizes. You know, let's deal with the issues that affect men. Let's deal with the issues with our partners as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that happen behind closed doors, Craig, that most men will never tell you about. You know, a lot of men. Yeah. Go through a lot of emotional abuse in their households, some physical as well.
Yeah.
And do you know how difficult it is as a man to have to go to a police station to report that your wife beat you up? You become a laughing stock, right? But in the same breath, you know, it's the things that our partners say to us. Mm. Start comparing us to Craig. Why aren't you like Craig? Craig, look at Craig. Mm. Why can't you be like Craig?
Mm.
You're killing my morale and my self confidence as a man.
Yeah.
And how do I become a confident father to my kids if you're already destroying that bit by bit? And so those are things that we kind of need to talk about. We need to unpack this whole notion of fatherlessness.
Yeah.
What does it mean, and what are the root causes of fatherlessness? Yes, we've got instances where the mother and the father obviously have broken up, and the father has decided that he's not going to take on that responsibility. Yeah. Let's deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
What is causing most men to run away from the responsibility of being fathers? Mm-hmm. Is it the financial responsibility that now they have to take on because they're selfish? Or is it because they just we're not ready? Let's talk about those things. And then there's the flip side of the coin where you find fathers who are seeking to be there for their children, but they can't have access.
Right.
Now they have to go through a court system.
It's a shocking situation.
I mean, Craig, I spoke to one guy, and I mean, I can speak openly because it's out there, Tumisho Masha.
Yeah.
After his second divorce, he went through an 8-year custody battle for his daughter that cost him $500,000.
Crazy.
That $500,000 could have gone to the child's trust fund.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so for me, you know, fatherlessness has got so many facets.
It really has. And we need to value it as a society.
Absolutely.
Fathers are equally important as mothers.
Absolutely.
And in fact, in a child's development, there are phases where the father's more important. You know, when
there's conversations that the mother could never have.
There's questions that you and I can answer that the woman can't, and vice versa.
Absolutely.
Both are needed. And we need to grow up as adults, you know, no matter what the crap is in our lives.
Let's
not let it affect our children, you know.
Very true.
So we need to value fathers, honor fathers. And I mean, I think we both do that.
Yeah.
We see the value of fathers. We value them. We honor them. But the call also is to men, fight for your children. Fight to be present in their lives.
You have to.
You have to, man. I mean, you are the most important man in your children's lives. As you said earlier. I mean,
first love.
As a father, your daughter's first love, first romance.
You set the tone.
You set the tone, man. And you are your son's first role model.
He's your
greatest hero.
Yeah.
So we as men have to step up and be those heroes.
We do.
Be those people who our daughters can see as the role model and as the bar for how men should treat women.
Yeah, that's true, Craig. And also the other thing is, you know, we need to raise our daughters to know what a man should treat them like through
what
us.
Not to accept and what to accept. Yeah.
And on the other side of the coin as well, we need to teach our boys to learn to respect themselves first. Because if you respect yourself, Craig, you're not going to disrespect the next person.
That's true.
If we teach our boys to respect themselves, we don't need to protect the girl child.
Yeah, 100%. The other thing, you know, go back to what you were saying earlier about a woman berating a man and saying, you know, I wish you were more like TT, I wish you dressed like him, I wish you drew, you know.
Yeah.
For us as men to get to the point where we have such a sense of self-value that those words don't affect us, they don't harm us.
Yeah.
That a woman, a brother, anyone can say something to us, but we're not reliant on that for our self-esteem.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of building up our own self-esteem that says, you know, I know who I am. I know I'm valuable. I know my children need me.
Yeah.
And I don't care what you say to me.
Yeah.
It's not going to change who I am.
Yeah.
You know, coming from that point of that standpoint of strengths and self-belief is crucial for us as men.
Absolutely. But at times it's difficult because we're human, right?
Easy
said than done.
Yeah.
I mean, as a public figure, I've been through this where people will praise the community work that I do, and there'll be that one comment that'll just throw you off. You've got like 1,000 comments. Yeah. Congratulations, this is beautiful. What you're doing. But there'll be that one comment.
And you lose sleep over the one.
and you want to track this person. And we are human beings after all. And we do have to open that room for disappointment. And that's what I teach my kids, that in life, I will disappoint you. I'm not perfect, and I will hurt you, and I will make mistakes. And I want you to know that the important thing is that you must learn from those mistakes so that you don't repeat the same mistake twice. You know, they say once bitten, twice shy. And for me, it's about raising these kids to understand that the world out there is tough, you need to toughen up.
Yeah.
And also be able to understand that you must be able to, you know, swim against the tide that comes your way.
And don't define yourself by your mistake.
Absolutely.
You mess up. I mean, absolutely. I wanted to ask you the question, you know, you went from fearing your dad to being a great friend to him.
Yeah.
Tell us about that journey. How did that take place?
I think time. I think the concept of time. I really believe in the concept of time because I think, you know, when I started my podcast, I had him as the first guest. And I asked him these questions. I said to him, why were you so strict on me? Mm-hmm. And he was so honest with me. He said to me, that's all I knew.
Right.
I took it from my father, who's my grandfather. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is, the way my grandfather raised me was beautiful. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was soft on me. I think it happens when you get older.
Does,
so to a point where my dad is soft on my kids because now he's their grandfather.
Yes.
And he said to me, look, my point of reference was how my dad raised us.
Yeah.
And by the time I realized that the way I'm raising you is not ideal, you're already an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm old enough to actually apologize to you and say that I acknowledge and I see how you are raising your kids. I would have loved to raise you.
That's a beautiful thing. It's for a
beautiful. It's a beautiful thing, Craig.
Men often don't do that, do they?
It's not easy. I mean, I'm 45, and up to this day, my dad struggles to say to me, "I love you."
Right.
He struggles even on the show.
Yeah.
I've challenged him a lot of times, and I've said, "Dad, I love you."
Just say it. Yeah.
And he'll respond by saying, "Ay, kaunganya means I love you too, but it's in Kasi lingo. It's more palatable for all that generation. They'll never say to you, I love you.
Right,
it's not natural for them. And I'm not going to hold that against him because it doesn't take away the fact that I know my dad loves me.
Right.
I know my dad adores me. And the fact that I've got a TV show with him, I'm sure for him, he's sitting there proud to say, Jesus, look at this boy now. Now I'm on TV talking about men's issues. And that's what it's about is, it's never too late, Craig.
It's never too late. I mean, that beautiful redemption story. You know?
Yeah.
And I think there's forgiveness.
Yeah.
There's acknowledgement of the wound.
Yeah.
You know, we need to say, you know, our dad did the best he knew how, but it hurt. It still hurt. And it wasn't okay.
Yeah.
And go through the process of letting that go and regaining your power and your self-esteem.
Yeah.
And then breaking the cycle. You know?
You have to. You have to. Once you've accepted that there is a scar, you focus on cushioning the scar and not making it worse. You know, you just treat the scar. That scar will never go away. Yeah.
But it's not going to define you.
It's not going to define you, but it's part of who you. It's part of what you went through. And for me, you know, I always say to people, I've got a scar here, you know, and this scar, I had a ganglion, so I had a very big, I don't know what you call a big ball here. And they said to me, if I don't cut it out, it's going to literally grow.
Yes.
So this scar reminds me of what I went through.
Right.
I'm not going to remove it. Yes, I might have put a tattoo to cover it, but it's not going to take away the scar. We can never run away from the pains that we've experienced as a people, but we can always make sure that it doesn't define who we are.
Absolutely.
And doesn't define the other generation that's coming behind us.
I think as men, often we need to refather ourselves, don't we?
Oh, yes.
We need to get ourselves right and whole.
Yeah.
I mean, what we didn't get, we need to find. Through books, through mates, through friends, through brothers, you know, just refather ourselves so that we can be the best man we can possibly be.
Absolutely.
And I think the most important role we can play as men is to be good fathers, good mentors.
Yeah.
Just good men.
Just good men. Just be a good human being, Craig. You know, when you came on my podcast, you said something that actually stuck with me up to this day. You said to me, you know, when someone dies, there are six men that carry your casket. Where were those six men when you were still alive? Yeah. The six pack of brotherhood. And ever since then, I use that analogy because it's so interesting to see how these six people will carry your casket proudly in their black suits and their shades. But where were they?
Exactly.
Where were they when you needed them to carry you whilst you're still alive? Yeah. And I think that's what it's about. You know, these platforms, you know, let's deal with them. Let's be honest about the issues that we are faced with. Let's not try and put them under the carpet and hope that they'll go away. Yeah. Because all we are doing is we're passing them on to the next generation.
Absolutely.
We are just literally passing our issues on. Yeah. And we've inherited issues from the previous generation that we're trying to deal with.
Exactly.
And it's through programs like these and campaigns and movements and networks like Father Nation and Amatama and many others out there that we'll have to fight this battle.
Very much so. You know, just as we come to an end, I had a friend not too long ago who took his own life.
Sure.
And, the notes that he left behind were absolutely tragic because he believed in his heart that the insurance payout on his death was worth more to his family than him being there because he didn't have the money.
Ooh.
And what an incredible lie. What an incredible lie.
Little did he know that they're going to get nothing.
Well, no, they did get it.
Oh, did they? Even though he committed suicide?
Yeah, because he hadn't. He took out the policy many, many years back.
Okay, you know?
So there's a lapse course.
Oh, okay, okay.
But the challenge is this, is that he was worth way, way more without money to his children than any
than
check
him
was.
Being
you know? And I think we need to realize as fathers, as men, we are so important. We matter so much.
Yeah.
And we need to step up and be that.
Yeah, and I think we also need to stop putting pressure amongst ourselves as men. Yeah. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves. Yeah. I see it out there, you know. We go out and I say to you, Craig, it's 5 o'clock now. I'm heading back home. So early. No, man. Why are you rushing? Yeah, is your wife strict? Or, instead of saying, my brother, drive safe.
Fantastic.
We'll see you another time. Yeah. Thank you for spending time with me. I know you've got a family.
Yes.
You've got to go spend time with those kids. It's the balance. Right. And I think we need to hold each other accountable, Craig.
Yeah.
There's no way that I'm going to come and confide in you about my issues of parenting, and then the next thing I hear it from someone else.
Yes, exactly.
And you know that trust amongst brothers. We need to find each other, and I think that's why a lot of men are not opening up because they're just scared that my stuff is going to be out there, and especially us public figures. You know, unfortunately, being a public figure, if it were up to me, in the next lifetime, I don't want to be a public figure. I don't because first of all, you relinquish all privacy.
Yes.
You relinquish any right of response or refusal.
Mm-hmm.
You're expected to smile everywhere you go. The minute you step into your car, into the public space, you're expected to take pictures. You're expected to take videos with whoever the fans are out there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what you're going through. They don't know that I'm going through my mental challenges.
Yes.
They don't know that I'm going through financial woes. They don't know that I've just lost a loved one. They don't care for that.
Yeah.
And so for me, I'll urge everyone and anyone, just be kind to the next person because you don't know what they're dealing with.
Exactly. And kind to yourself as
well. And kind to yourself. But it starts with, that's what I said earlier on, it starts with you respecting yourself first. There's no way that I can have respect for myself as a human being in the manner I dress, how I look after myself, and then come and disrespect you. Because where's that coming from?
Absolutely. Any final thoughts on being dangerous to fatherlessness?
All I can say is that being dangerous to fatherlessness is a pandemic that we need to end.
Yeah.
We need to each take accountability. This thing of passing the buck and saying, no, Craig runs Father Nation. He'll resolve it.
Right.
There's no way you're going to resolve it, Craig.
Yeah.
And also, I think, you know, we need to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
We need to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of men like you and myself who are pushing these fatherhood and manhood and brotherhood initiatives,
mm-hmm.
but no one checks on them. Nobody.
That's true.
The last time I asked you this in Kosnai, I just said, but who checks up on you guys? We are busy rallying these movements, trying to get men together, but we are also human.
Very
and that's my
true.
Parting
shot. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. The fact that we get exhausted and we need, you know, we all need. Yeah.
Everyone needs a service.
Titi, thank you, man. Let me just, you know, I mean, just message that's come out of this is that boys and girls need fathers and mothers. Mothers, allow the fathers of your children to be involved in their lives. Encourage them. I know sometimes as a mother, you want the father to be involved and they're not involved. And it's not your fault at all. It's theirs. But I know some mothers use the weaponize the children and let's encourage fatherhood. Let's honor fatherhood. I mean, mothers and fathers are equally important. Single mothers have held this country together. You know, let's be honest. Single mothers are heroes. We need mothers. We need fathers. So let's start a movement of restoring men to be good fathers, of restoring men to be good men. And brothers and men like Titi and Bahia are fighting the good fight. Dangerous to fatherlessness, dangerous to GBV, dangerous to toxic masculinity. TT, power to you, brother. And sure. Thanks for being with me on the show.
Thank you so much, Craig. Yeah. And may this show grow tenfold. May you get to engage with more people and touch lives, because through conversations, we are able to unlock these issues.
Absolutely.
Smonge, siti tango, dangerous, but good. Dangerous, but good.
awesome.